There will be spoilers ahead. Lots of spoilers, so be careful, won't you?
Okay, Mike, let's just finish stacking these boxes and we can get on with this week's entry in our 'Cause I Wanna and You're Gonna Like It series. Okay, hang on, where's Bumpy? We could really use a pack pony. What do you mean Bumpy's been kidnapped? What? The evil wizard Steve has taken Bumpy because Bumpy has the sacred hemorrhoids of Kvekdek? And he'll sacrifice Bumpy in order to fulfill the prophecy of Oinka Doinka Doinka Doo deep in the sub-basement of the unholy warehouse of Brocklehurst, surrounded by an army of undead marmosets? And the only way to rescue him is to go on a perilous journey through a twisted dreamscape of ancient evil gods and sentient Twinkies who exist only to destroy? Huh, guess we're gonna need a new pony. Check Craigslist for me, would you? While we check the used pony listings, let's talk about John Carpenter's 1986 cult classic, Big Trouble in Little China. I'm your host, Max 6½ Demon Bag Levine, and over there, revving up his truck, the Lamb Chop Express, is Mike, I hope Lopan doesn't notice that I have green eyes, Loose. Dispense some CB-based wisdom on us, Mike.
Magic hemorrhoids?
Yeah,
They're bursting with power. Okay. And as a matter of fact, I do have green eyes, so I guess I could have married David Lopan.
Let him know he might come back.
I know James Hong's still alive.
Yes, he is. He's 97, but he's
still
kicking.
We love James Hong. Oops.
But before we get to James Hong and whoever else is in this movie, we have our
poll question.
Last week, our heroes were bound and gagged. No, wait, sorry. We asked you, what movie predicted future events, people, technology best? And you had opinions. Jen Ings said, at this point, Idiocracy. that's kind of on the nose, isn't it?
Just the title.
Disturbingly so. Kelly J. Cooper said, 1984, given how tech companies surveil us. Oh, I think we've gone way beyond anything Orwell thought of.
Yeah, we're in 1985 now.
Oh, yeah.
The sequel.
Famed journalist Harry McCracken said, Americathon. Oh, my God, I forgot that one. Which predicted China's capitalism, the USSR's downfall, Nike becoming a cool brand, and unaffordable housing prompting people to live in RVs.
Huh.
God, that's right, that was John Ritter was in that.
Was he really?
Yes, he was.
Harry's really good at pulling out really obscure films that, The Box. I remember there's one film he quoted called The Box that I'd never heard of. And thank you, Harry.
Aaron Perez said Minority Report had some good future tech. Yes.
It did.
See our entire report, our entire report on Minority Report.
But we don't have any of it now, crime and,
Yeah, but I think he means like the retinal scans and the tailored ads.
The tailored ads. You know what? I don't know if they predicted that or caused it.
You'd be surprised.
Yeah.
Nick Hoffman says, original Planet of the Apes. Damn you all to hell.
Yeah, you know, they were right about those apes rising up and taking over. Wait a minute, what?
Huh?
I don't
know. Okay.
I think.
Well, we are kind of being ruled by damn dirty apes.
I guess we've taken a stance, haven't we?
Yeah. Robert Butler says, tech-wise, Minority Report. 95% of that tech is real and in the world. Except for the self-driving cars are out there. But the cars that
can go up and down, straight up and down, and the giant highways that ride up the side of buildings.
Oh, yeah, no, they're...
and the
they're
future
still
crime.
Anyway, also closest to reality, Idiocracy. I think we're going to be hearing more about that one. Tyler Stewart says, 2001 A Space Odyssey is near and dear to my heart. A Howard Johnson's in space should really have been a thing by now. Wanna eat some clams?
Why would anybody want that?
I don't know.
I mean, better there than here, I suppose.
Yeah.
Howard
Charles
Johnson.
Forsyth says, Westworld. In the 1973 film, the androids go berserk and the engineers have no idea why. This is because the engineers didn't write the AI for the androids. Uh-oh. Another AI did.
Oh, well, that could never lead to anything bad.
Oh, no. This idea is touched on briefly in the HBO series, but if they were to remake the film today, it would be a major theme,
yeah,
as we are now seeing massive code bases created by AI that we don't fully understand. AI, the film, was based on a short story, Super Toys Last All Summer, and Teddy is a super toy.
True.
In the film, Teddy can walk and talk much like a living teddy bear, but has some subtle gaps in self-awareness, as do most of the androids. When the film first came out, this level of AI seemed nearly magical, but it's well within the capabilities of today's LLM. Of course, today's Teddy would not be able to walk so effortlessly and would need to be supported by a data center the size of a football field. AI, huh? I have the most extraordinary coincidence to report. See last week's episode on AI.
It's like every movie people have mentioned, with except for Idiocracy, we've covered.
Yeah.
Man, I already
read. And of course, that fine Irish lad, Bill O'Lading.
Whirr, Mr. McMiser.
Yep. Idiocracy.
Okay.
Truly, we are living in the envisioned parody world only 20 years ago. The film works, not because it literally predicts 2026. Oh, God, it's this year. I forgot that.
Uh-oh.
But because it accurately... We may have to actually watch this film. Because it accurately exaggerates real trends that actually bloomed into world-consuming sicknesses. The film skewers anti-intellectualism, the collapse of expertise, the dominance of branding and consumption, and a media ecosystem that rewards shameless volume over sense in every case. We now live in that nightmare. Idiocracy's future is run by slogans, algorithms, and vibes rather than evidence. Uncomfortably familiar now, the fact that the protagonist does not escape or even solve the problems of the world he enters also reflects our probably intractable problems today. We're stuck in dystopia, and there is no white knight coming to save us. The white knight is instead carrying an incomprehensible banner of blather and playing Pied Piper, leading the masses into hell. The film chills me. Oy. Well.
You want to watch this, huh?
I'm depressed.
Yeah.
I don't want to do this show anymore. I'm just going to sit in a dark hole somewhere.
For the next 45 minutes, Max and I will hum. Happy birthday to me.
You know, maybe our hotline will cheer me up.
Oh, a new date for Max.
Hi, Doris.
Hello, Max Mike Movies. Hi, Max. This is Dora Simplemeyer here to answer a poll question, which this week just happens to be, what movie predicted future events, technology, or person the best? I'll be honest with you. I had to look this one up because I wasn't sure which ones did what. So I looked it up, and the first movie that I thought of actually is in here, and that's Demolition Man. I think of it because when he takes the eyeball out and uses it for the retinal scan, but there's actually a whole lot of other things in that movie that really kind of were predicted for the future that came to be. And the number one on everybody's list seems to be 2001: The Space Odyssey. And another one that I was like, yeah, you're right, there was a bunch of stuff in there, was Back to the Future 2. There was a bunch of stuff. I'm not a big fan of that movie, but I gotta say, yeah, that's a thing. But I'll go with the first one, Demolition Man, but you got them all. Anyway, I hope you guys have a wonderful week, and I look forward to hearing next week's episode because I love that movie so much. See you later, Max. Bye.
Let me rest my head in your verbal lap. Oh, Demolition Man. Now that, honestly, that was more of a trend sort of thing. They were making fun a lot of, well, back then it was called political correctness. Now I guess it's woke.
Yeah. Because that's something to make fun of.
Yeah, yeah. Now, there's a lot of it, though, and I do love the idea that all restaurants are now Taco Bell. And
I never saw Demolition Man. I like the song.
No. It's illegal to... Oh, is that actually from the movie? Did they write it for that?
No, it's a police song.
That's what I thought. It has nothing to do with the movie.
Nope. You would think that they would do that because it's right there, but no.
Yeah. And Back to the Future 2.
Hmm,
I have not seen a lot of people hovering around upside down, but I got to say, the monitor at one point when Michael J. Fox is talking to Needles,
right,
and he's getting all those info facts popping up on the screen, that's really close to what we have now, and it's what the smart glasses are trying to do.
One of the things I've noticed, too, because in the film, there's a point where it's raining, and Dr. Brown says, oh, just wait 5 seconds. My weather app on my phone has gotten exceedingly precise as to when it's expect rain in the next 16 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
What about, huh? Like, yeah. Is this programmed now? I don't know. But yeah, so thank you, Doris. That's really cool.
And from that technological dystopia far in the north where robo-penguins mercilessly roam,
it's Canada.
Feeding on cyber walrus eye.
Beat on you.
Canada. Vince says, one could write a book to answer this question. I'll stick to only a few examples. 2001 A Space Odyssey had video chat and flat portable tablets. Metropolis had, I think, the first really humanoid-looking android robot, and though it didn't interest me, she predicted how crazy people get over anything that even only seems like it's talking to you.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Eliza.
Yeah. Siri, Alexa. People are having, like, actual conversations with these things.
Yeah.
Nice one, Vince. Now I'm even more depressed.
Oh, stop.
But what about you, Mike? What film predicted the future in some way?
I hope it's not actually predicting the future, but there's a very prescient film that feels like we're headed that way that most people have not seen. And to be fair, up till a certain point, it was exceedingly hard to see. And that's a film called Colossus, the Forbin Project.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Yeah. Apparently, at one point, there were the only prints left of it were TV prints. That's how I saw it, was in a science fiction film marathon.
Yep.
There has been a 4K restoration a few years ago by Shout Factory, which I may actually get, because you know what I forgot was totally Marion Ross is in it, of all people. It's like, really? Okay.
Mrs. But
that's a film about AI, two of them. There's one here in the States and one in Russia, and they're like, basically, okay, you guys are, this is, I don't, if they didn't get War Games from this, I don't know where War Games got
its thing. They did. I'm
sure. But basically the AI is like, okay, you're going to take care of our defense strategy and stuff, and they have their own one. And the two AIs get turned on, and they instantly start talking to each other and say, you know what? These humans are crazy. We should tell them what to do. Yes, that's a very good idea, comrade. Let's do this. And they merge and form one big AI and basically just shut everybody down.
Yeah, it's actually in some ways a lot more realistic than Skynet.
Yeah.
In that they go, no, we're not, let's see, the biggest threat to the world is human beings, so we're just going to run things for you. We're now in charge. We've got all the weapons. You do what we tell you, and we're going to keep you alive.
Yeah, probably.
The problem is, nowadays, I'm going, I, for one, welcome our new robot overlords.
Yeah, I haven't seen that film in probably close to 30 years, if not more.
Yeah.
It might show up on this series, but I don't know if Max can handle it, so I don't know if it will. But I would say I don't know that it does predict the future. I mean, the original Star Trek TV show predicted so much of the technology, or again, I think honestly caused it. I think a lot of people went into the space program because of Star Trek. A lot of people were like, oh, communicator, that's cool. We should have that. And just decided to make it. It is one of the things I will say in defense of the human race is that we're an imaginative little monkey. That's what we are. And we see something cool and we're like, well, that doesn't make sense, but let's see if I can make it make sense. And then we do. So, yeah, I'm going to throw that one into the mix just because it's one most people haven't seen.
Works.
But you, Max, how would you add to the mix to make a bigger mix?
First of all, Max. A mix to the max? I got to agree with the people who are talking about Idiocracy. Socially, I think that's creepily accurate.
Yeah.
Especially the part at the very beginning where the reason it happens is the smart people are going, we don't want to have children. This world is a mess. We don't want to bring more in. And it's the idiots who are going, we're pregnant again for the ninth time.
Yeah.
There's that. But also, you know, there was one, this is a concept that we've seen, I think, in series and maybe some other things. It was called Surrogates.
Mm-hmm.
It's from 2009. It's with Bruce Willis. And the idea is nobody leaves their home anymore. They all sit in these pods and transfer their consciousness into these surrogates. They're like remote-controlled humanoid robots. They're avatars, basically.
Okay.
And
not that avatar.
Not that one. No. And it's not, no bending of air takes place either.
I don't mind that one so much, but.
Yeah. But, you see everyone is now beautiful and perfect because you can make the body look like anything you want.
So like real life Second Life.
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay.
And eventually, you know, nobody goes outside. Everyone is completely detached from each other because they only interact with the surrogates.
Can the robots, how do I put this? Can they...
They can have robo-sex, yes.
Okay.
That was I would guess that would be the first thing they designed.
Of course it is. Because
technology is driven. That's a very interesting
technology. How do we make it screw?
Technology is driven by porn. Look at the video industry.
It kind of is.
It really is.
Awesome.
Yes, we had some great ones. Thank you all for this stuff, depressing as it may have been. And we want some more, perhaps, I hope, a slightly less depressing question.
Sorry.
We'd like to know, what's your favorite movie that was ignored at the box office but found new life in some other form? You know, home video, midnight shows.
Now, how did you come up with this idea, Max? I cannot figure this out.
I don't know. It just came to me in a dream.
Did it.
But before we move on to trivia, we have viewer mail.
Listener mail. There's no viewers.
Yes, it's viewer mail.
Yeah, no, that's right, Paul. The sting
I'm
says
turning into listener, David Letterman.
Then you know what? You get to record the new sting. You get to sing the new listener mail theme
viewer
song.
Viewer mail, viewer mail. Now we're going to watch some viewer mail.
There. Isn't that Dave Letterman's?
No.
Yes, it is.
Of course it is. We've got some listener mail.
Listener mail.
Edit as you wish. And we have two, actually, from our most noble Teutonic friend, Herr Franz Josef Halbwitz.
Yeah, it's good.
It's good. He's mostly talking about Dogma, but I thought this was pretty interesting. Mike's criticism of the film, which I'll summarize as, if you're going to be a rules lawyer, no fair making up your own rules, is valid and a point well taken.
Thank you.
However, I do take issue with some of the things brought up as, quote, not in the Bible, unquote. Well, maybe they could have been. Let's take the muses.
Maybe they could have been.
Let him finish. Some of the apostles, most notably St. Paul, were educated in the Greek cultural sphere. The books of the New Testament were first written, or at least written down, in Greek. They would have known what muses were. They could have put muses in, and maybe they did, possibly edited out later along with Jesus' marriage to Mary Magdalene and the Jello at the Last Supper. He's riffing from a Monty Python sketch.
Skip it, brother.
Likewise, Rufus is a perfectly good Latin word meaning red. And what was the other widespread language of the time? Anybody? That's right, Latin. Jesus could have nicknamed one of his apostles Red, just like he nicknamed another one Rocky. Matthew 16:18. Peter, i.e. Petros, meaning rock.
Grr.
There was a passing snicker about an apostle Steve. St. Stephen, venerated as the first Christian martyr, Acts 7:58-60, would like a word. And as for Loki... yeah, I got nothing. Thank you in advance for your attention to this matter. I remain, etc.
Well, thank you, Herr Halbwitz. However, could have, might have, we're getting into alien technology here. It's like, what if the aliens? No, there isn't any. The point was, there isn't any. Not what could there have been.
Because it got expunged. Like the fact that Jesus was black. So... yeah, also another one. Hey, guys, I'm back with another email, or should I say epistle, of fun religious facts vaguely related to a recent MMM episode. This time it's about AI.
Ah.
An Episcopal priest of my acquaintance tells the following story.
Uh-oh.
Back in the 70s, a young couple came to him wanting to have their newborn son baptized AI, pronounced like the two letters, emphasis on the first. So, AI.
Okay.
They thought it was a fine Old Testament name. See Joshua chapter 8, that would be easy to spell and pronounce.
Oh boy, I disagree there.
He had to gently inform them that it meant heap of ruins. AI equals heap of ruins. Is this a biblical prophecy about artificial intelligence? Or maybe just an early bad review of the film? Inquiring minds want to know. Hoping this finds you in prosperity and good health. Okay, thanks, bye. Well, thank you, Herr Halbwitz. Fascinating thoughts.
I guarantee that if they had named their kid AI, that it would have caused a moment pause the first day of any school he went to. And
I hear?
No, that would have been a horrible idea. So
yeah, I am.
Never mind.
Good for
pile
him for
of
stopping
ruins.
I like pile of ruins.
But definitely, thank you, Herr Halbitz. We love hearing your emails. Always, always, always.
And we will tell you how to respond to our poll question or how to send us more fascinating emails at the end of the show.
Yeah.
Now,
the facts.
Budget for Big Trouble in Little China, $25 million.
That much, huh?
Box office, $11
million. Oh, some of that was mine. Yeah. That's too bad.
Kurt Russell confessed on the DVD commentary that he was afraid to star in this movie because he had made a whole string of movies that had flopped at the box office.
Mm.
When he asked John Carpenter about it, he told Kurt it didn't matter to him. He just wanted to make the movie with him.
Yep. Yeah.
If you're interested, at the beginning, when we see the title, Big Trouble in Little China, there's some Chinese characters under it. They translate to, evil spirits make a big scene in little spiritual state.
Okay.
So it's kind of close.
Wow, they sort of predict subtitles.
John Carpenter envisioned the film as an inverse of traditional scenarios in action films, where they usually have a Caucasian protagonist helped by a minority sidekick. Jack Burton, despite his bravado, is constantly portrayed as rather bumbling. And bumbling upsets Holmes no end.
I mean, that's a nice way to put it.
In one fight sequence, he even knocks himself unconscious before the fight begins.
Yes, he does.
Wang Chi, on the other hand, is constantly portrayed as highly skilled and competent.
Mm.
You know who the first choice, Carpenter's first choice was to play Wang Chi? Jackie Chan.
Oh, no way. Wouldn't have happened.
Yeah, the producer, Lawrence Gordon, wouldn't hear of it. He thought Chan's English wasn't good enough.
Oh, but luckily some of the other characters, like Carter Wong, his English was right up there.
Well, yeah, but he only has like four lines.
Yeah.
Carpenter really wanted him after the success of Police Story, which came out the year before. But Chan declined, and we got Dennis Dunn instead.
I think that was a good choice, honestly.
Probably was, really. The three storms,
thunder,
lightning, and rain,
are
partly the inspiration for the popular characters of the lightning god Raiden from Mortal Kombat. And David Lopan was the inspiration for the evil sorcerer Shang Tsung.
Okay.
The three storms themselves were inspired by the ninjas out of the Lone Wolf and Cub movie.
Oh, yeah. The hats.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. John Carpenter and Kurt Russell explained that the test screening was so overwhelmingly positive that both of them expected it to be a big hit.
Oh.
However, 20th Century Fox put little into promoting the movie, and it ended up being a bomb.
Oh.
Another problem, of course, was the film was released right in the middle of the hype for Aliens, which also came out in 86.
Yeah.
And that was released 16 days afterwards. However, Big Trouble in Little China went on to be a huge cult hit on home video.
Mm.
Carpenter and Russell explained the reason the studio did little to promote the film was they just didn't know how to promote it. They didn't know what kind of movie it was.
I mean, that's not unfair.
Yeah.
We'll get back to that.
After the commercial and initial critical failure of the film, Carpenter became very disillusioned with Hollywood and went off and became an independent filmmaker.
Yeah.
Says, I think Big Trouble is a wonderful film. I'm very proud of it, but the reception it received and the reasons for that reception were too much for me to deal with. I'm too old for that sort of bull.
Pucky. I think the word's pucky. Yes, that's the word you're looking for. Pucky.
According to Carpenter, the opening of the film with Egg Shen in the lawyer's office was added at the request of 20th Century Fox executives in order to make Kurt Russell's character, Jack Burton, more heroic. Yeah. They didn't get the idea of Jack being the sidekick rather than a hero. Without it, it just would have started with the scene where Jack is driving into San Francisco.
We should come back to that.
Kurt Russell suffered a really bad case of the flu during the scene just after the brothel. So the reason he looks all sweaty is he was.
Oh.
Yeah, very high fever.
Poor guy.
The story was originally written as a Western, in the Old West, but Carpenter decided to set it in modern times. Oh. They even mentioned that instead of Jack Burton's truck being stolen, it was originally his horse.
Okay.
Yeah.
Don't know
the interior of Egg Shen's garage/office is Fire Station 23.
Is that Ghostbusters?
It's Ghostbusters, the business interior of Ghostbusters. Yep. Kurt Russell turned down the lead role of Connor McLeod in Highlander to appear in this film.
Oh, dear gods.
Can you imagine that?
No. I mean, it's bad enough we had a Frenchman trying to be a Scot. Come on. We're going to come back to that, too.
Yeah, yeah. He did base, by the way, he based a lot of the character of Jack Burton on John Wayne.
That's was it?
He talks that way.
Yes. I never thought about it, but I watched it this time, and it's in my notes going, I think he's trying to do John Wayne.
Yep. It's just like when he, in Escape from New York, he based Snake Plissken on Clint Eastwood. Yep. Think about it. It really makes sense.
Okay.
James Hong, who plays David Lopan, got his start in show business going to USO shows during World War II and performing as Al Jolson in blackface.
Oh.
Yeah. Kurt Russell had to learn to drive the semi-truck for a few shots of the film. He would joke that he was afraid he was going to hurt someone. Carpenter would joke he was more worried about the actor breaking the truck. The Chinese characters on the front of Egg Shen's bus say, Uncle Egg's tours guarantee a good time.
Aw.
Peter Kwong, who plays Rain of the Three Storms, cited his character's long hair as one of the best parts of making the film, even though, according to him, quote, I had to sit in 3 hours of makeup every day just to get in and out of the $3,000 wig.
Yeah, but it looks so cool.
The lipstick coming off Kim Cattrall and onto Kurt Russell wasn't a planned joke, but something they improvised when they saw that the makeup came off so easily.
Oh, we'll come back to that.
Yep. Carpenter notes this is just another example of how certain actors won't let themselves look like a fool and why Russell was such a perfect choice for Jack Burton.
Was he? We'll talk about Kurt Russell.
Girl, boy, boy, boy. The brides of Lopan have to have green eyes, but both Kim Cattrall and Susie Pye both have brown eyes. They wore green contacts for the movie, which is unfortunately very obvious in the high-definition version.
What?
There is a ton of other stuff, but I think that's plenty.
Yeah.
Now let's get to the plot.
Yeah, let's get to that.
Old Jack Burton is just your average truck-driving cowboy, driving his truck, drinking beer, sometimes at the same time, and dispensing wisdom over the CB radio. After a friendly game of Fantan with his friend Wang Chi in San Francisco, he joins Wang on a trip to the airport to pick up Wang's fiancée, the green-eyed Miao Yin. And things get weird. Miao Yin gets kidnapped by a vicious street gang. Jack and Wang end up in the middle of a war between two fighting tongs, and suddenly the whole setting changes as they confront the evil sorcerer, Lo Pan, and his henchmen, the Three Storms, who are searching for a girl with green eyes for Lo Pan to marry so that he can become flesh once more and rule the universe. Forget it, Jack. It's Chinatown. With the help of a plucky immigration lawyer, Gracie Law, Wang's friend Eddie, and the local wizard, Egg Shen, because why not? Wang and Jack descend into a strange underworld to rescue Biao Yin, and eventually Gracie, destroy Lo Pan, and most importantly, retrieve Jack's stolen truck. See? Pretty basic story.
The film.
Thank you.
So did you see this when it came out?
No, not in the theater. I saw it a couple of years later on home video. I didn't know it was in the theaters. They weren't kidding when they said they didn't promote it. Did you?
I think so. I think I do remember seeing it. I also do remember seeing Aliens, which was interesting because it's one of the few films I've ever seen with our friend Matt. Matt was in town at that point, and we went to see Aliens together. But yeah, I did see it, and I think it was one of those films where it was like, I like this, but I don't know what to make out of it at first. Just like Buckaroo Banzai. I remember coming out of Buckaroo Banzai literally dizzy, like, what just happened? I don't know.
Yep.
So when you saw it on home video, what did you think back in the 80s?
I remember thinking it was so much fun. And again, I also thought of it. It's like, wow, this is very much like Buckaroo Banzai in that they just dump you into the middle of it and you just better hang on. By the way, the guy, one of the producers, Richter, I think, he also produced Buckaroo Banzai.
Oh, well, there you go.
Yeah.
W.D. Richter. He's one of the writers of this, actually. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's not your average film.
No, it is. I understand why they would have had trouble promoting it, because how the hell do you describe it? Oh, it's a martial arts, magic, comedy, action. Eh?
I think I heard a rumor of that basically John Carpenter had seen some Hong Kong action films, some of which have some very strange elements, magical elements, stuff like that. And basically he wanted to do his own version of that. And that's where Big Trouble in Little China came from, which would not surprise me.
Nope, wouldn't surprise me.
Mm-hmm. I liked it in the 80s. I don't know if I still like it now. We're going to get to that part. But what I do know is that we like to talk about the cast. Okay, look who's first. Yep. If it isn't that master thespian, Kurt Russell.
I thought he was dead.
I will always love Kurt Russell, if for no other reason, for the way he plays Jack Burton in this film. Yep. And it never occurred to me before watching this time that he was trying to do a bad John Wayne, but dear gods, does it work.
It really does, because he's not overplaying the John Wayne. No. It comes out sometimes in the accent. He also is walking like him a little bit. He has that lopsided walk that John Wayne had because one leg was shorter than the other.
Is that true?
Yeah, he had scoliosis as a kid.
Oh, did not know that.
That's why he has that weird lope. But I think he's terrific. I don't know who else you could have gotten. By the way, he apparently worked out like a demon before this movie to build up some of that muscle.
Huh. He's just such a moron. He's such a clod.
And he's so full of unearned confidence, but he's also utterly likable.
Yeah.
The way he does it, like whenever he always, his first instinct is to do the right thing.
Right.
It just is. When Wang is like, I can't ask you to, let's go. Thank you, Jack. He doesn't even finish the question. And Jack is like, of course I'm going. You know, no, I can get it. I can go in. My mind and my spirit are as one. And Jack, as two, I'm going along. Even though that doesn't make any sense.
Almost everything that Jack Burton says does not make sense. Yeah. Almost everything. But it all comes down to this. It's all in the reflexes.
It's all in the reflexes.
And the thing is, it's totally true. When Jack thinks, bad things happen. When he doesn't, when he reacts, he's fine. So Kurt Russell, I've liked Kurt Russell. I mean, he was very underplayed in The Thing, another John Carpenter film. Yeah. Another Carpenter film that did poorly, see our entire episode on The Thing, that did poorly when it came out, and later everyone's like, wait a minute, this film's awesome. So, and as you pointed out very, very subtly, his best role was probably Jungle Boy in the episodes of Gilligan's Island. Yeah. Yep. Next. We have Kim Cattrall, who is, for my money, the 80s version of Beverly Garland, because there she is.
She is. And this is back. I mean, she was just stunning back then.
Was she?
Yes, she was.
Okay.
She was really
pretty. I thought she was, pretty, but I didn't find her, drop down gorgeous or anything. But
I like in this how she manages to talk like she's in a Howard Hawks movie.
Her first lines is, Lords of Death, Street Punks, Chinatown, what are they doing here? It's all breathlessly said as one sentence.
Yep. What is it? Warrants take too long. Violence out of the question.
She does have this wonderful sort of sing-songy, forceful dimness to her.
Yeah.
That is very enjoyable. Kim Cattrall, though, how to put this, has this habit of showing up in, shall we say, generally less stellar productions until she showed up in Sex and the City. But
but of course you're also forgetting her triumph in Mannequin.
I never saw Mannequin.
She plays a store mannequin who comes to life, and it is a triumph.
What is it, Invader from L.A. or whatever it is that she was in?
I don't remember.
Yeah, whatever. That MST favorite.
City Limits.
City Limits, yeah. Okay, mm-hmm. An actor portrays Chilliness.
Yeah.
So, I know that's
She. I think she's good in this.
She is fun in this.
Yeah.
Dennis Dunn is Wang Chi. He's awesome.
Oh, I'm so glad they got him.
He is so much fun. So much energy.
He is.
And
he's so nice. You just get this feeling, this is a good guy.
You like him.
Yeah.
Instantly. So that's cool. But we have royalty next.
Oh.
James Hong.
His imperial gloriousness, James Hong.
This is the first film I think I had seen where I knew who James Hong was. He's shown up in things forever.
He's been in everything.
But David Lo Pan, for me, was this great mix of this guy's been around for 2,000 years and what is wrong with this person?
He is so effortlessly creepy when he, with the weird little high-pitched giggle and the line delivery. Yes, the line delivery is like, what's this? These friends of yours? Now this really pisses me off to no end. Like, what?
Yeah, and of course, we also know him as the jeweler from Diablo. He's
Yep. And also as Poe's dad from Kung Fu Panda.
Right, he plays the goose who doesn't realize that. Yep. Yeah, okay.
I'm adopted?
Poe, oh Poe. I just adore James Hong, and this is probably my favorite role of his, but he, just like everybody else in this film, is just like giving it their all, and David Lo Pan makes no sense in some ways, but...
Nope.
He is
having such a good time.
But we also have a little bit of royalty in Victor Wong. See our entire episode on Tremors. Victor Wong's a lot of fun whenever he shows up.
Poor guy. You ever wonder, you notice how he has that slight droop to one eye?
Yeah.
I think when he was a child, he had a bad case of Bell's palsy.
Oh, that's too bad.
And that's sort of a leftover of it.
Oh.
But he just keeps on going, that guy.
Yeah. We have Kate Burton as Margot, who... is fine.
Is there.
She doesn't have a lot to do, which is fine. Apparently, she has a crush on Eddie, played by Donald Lee, who is also fine.
Eddie's kind of fun. I wish they had kind of done a little more with him because nobody really gets a lot to do.
Well, after the point of Egg Shen, not a lot of people get to do, but that's the top truth. Five are fine. But then we get, and honestly, they're...
Wait, sorry. I just want to go back to Kate Burton. Do you know who her father is?
Jack Burton?
Nope. Let's just say he dreamed of a big pool of scotch. Oh. Yes, she is the daughter of Richard Burton.
That poor woman. Okay.
Yeah, I know. What a life. But
we have, Donald Lee is Eddie. Carter Wong is Thunder, who gets some lines, which is of the three. I don't know if that was necessarily the best one to give some lines to, but he is very impressive.
Honestly, from what I remember, he was the one with the strongest English.
Really?
Yes. And as well, his accent is a bit pronounced.
Well, you get this impression he does not know what he's saying. I mean, he might, but...
It's got to be phonetic.
Yeah, and he's very impressive as Thunder.
Yeah.
Peter Kwong as Rain is really handsome. Oh, that long hair, and when he's in the suit. But the cutest of the three is James Pax as Lightning.
Oh, Lightning, yeah.
He's cute. And they're just there for not even eye candy. They're just there.
No, they're
there
for the action sequences because the fight choreography with them is so wild and over the top. It's like wire foo everywhere.
Well, in the first fight we get in the alley when they're trying to find the Lords of Death, it's just two Tongs fighting each other. And quite honestly, the fight sequences aren't nearly as good as they would be in a Hong Kong action film. And it's like, okay, guys beating each other up. And then the storms show up and it's like, wait, there's lightning coming out of that man's hands. They're flying. Yes. What is going on?
That's when the movie really goes from, this is going to be like a standard martial arts movie. Oh my goodness. No, it isn't.
Yeah. As far as the cast goes, and the rest at this point, really.
Well, yeah. I mean, Susie Pai is Miao Yin. She's very good at sitting there and looking pretty.
She was a playmate, so.
Yeah, she was, and she did a total of, I believe, 7 movies.
That
maybe
many?
8.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then there's just other people. Yeah. It is really interesting to me, and actually, I remember a friend of mine who worked in a bookstore with me, who was Chinese-American, he said, I loved that movie. There's almost no white people in it.
Yeah.
It's all Asian actors. I think that's great.
And a lot of them are fun. Some of them
really are.
The best thing in the film is James Hong. As much as I like Kurt Russell, and he's got a bigger part, and I do love the way he played it, it's James Hong. Everything from the imperious standing there in costume, David Lo Pan, to the weird little guy in the wheelchair that makes no sense. Yeah. So, but yeah, we have a really fun cast, so that's pretty cool. This happens a lot on this show. Films we've seen many, many times before, and I'll watch them this time. I always do this. I sit there and I watch the whole thing and I'm taking notes. It had never occurred to me until this viewing why the truck was called the Pork Chop Express. I never noticed. He's carrying pigs.
Oh,
they show them unloading pigs from the truck.
I missed that.
Me too. Every single time. But there they are. It's like, oh, now I get it. He hauls pigs. Which, quite honestly, is perfect for Jack Burton.
Yes, yes, it is.
Yeah. So yeah, we get he shows up and he's playing. I couldn't tell what game they're playing. At first, it's like, is it
called
dice?
Fantan?
What is it? Because it looked like it was actually a cockroach fight. But what
it's a very simplified version of dominoes or dice. It's basically odds or evens for the most part. Yeah,
that's tough.
It's a game you can play when you're very drunk. That's why it's so popular.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. Yeah, so we see the back end of San Francisco's Chinatown and you know, the people who run the restaurants buying produce and pigs and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, we find out about Miao Yin and we have to go in the Chinese girl with green eyes. And we get to, do you remember way back in the 80s when if you were going to meet somebody from a flight, you could actually go to the gate?
Yes, dimly. Yeah. You didn't have to take your shoes off or get strip searched or cavity searched.
But you could actually do it. Never mind.
You could go there. You could go down to the gate and there they were right when they got off the plane.
Yep. And yeah, that was a totally different time.
At the same time, Gracie is down there meeting Tara, who has no lines and disappears after two scenes.
Well, it seems I really she's just there so we know what Kim Cattrall's doing there because she's apparently a lawyer who for some reason interested in immigration.
She's an immigration lawyer,
and she's trying to save women from being taken up by the white tiger. We're getting ahead. So there's a big fight. And that's when the storms show up and they take Miao Yin. And it was initially, it's like, it's a fight, it's fine. But then the storms show up. I love that scene where I can't remember. Are they forks? What are they? Lightning's holding. And he's got these two forks and they just start spinning in his hands.
They're like little propellers.
Yeah, I couldn't. And then, you know, lightning's happening, blah, 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 blah. Yeah. All sorts of weird stuff's going on and makes you just go, okay. And then throughout the film, every once in a while, Kurt Russell's character, he's kind of there to ask the dumb questions that we're too flummoxed to ask ourselves.
Yeah.
Like, what's with that? Oh, those are the three storms. Who are the three? I'll tell you later.
He never really gets any answers. Whenever it's like, what's happening? They start to, Chinese black magic, the first sovereign emperor, Qing Dai, the demon god of the... By the way, almost all of that stuff is made up.
Well, of course it is. They
looked at some Chinese mythology and like stole bits and pieces. The whole thing of the nobleman becoming immortal, that's way more Western and European than it is Chinese.
But
so if you're sitting there going, oh, are any of these people real? Like, no, it's all made up. I mean, the three storms are vaguely represented by certain of the Chinese gods, like the Thunderer and the Mother of Lightning, but...
Thundar the Barbarian? What?
Yeah, don't hurt yourself.
Well, here's the thing. Would you want them have actually been playing?
No, I like the fact that we have no idea because we're right there with Jack. We're all totally just going, ha? China is here, Mr. Burton. China is here. What does that mean?
There's another one much, much later on. It's like, it will come out no more. What? What will come out no more?
Yeah, this monster never comes find out, eats one of their people, and nothing. Or like, what's that? You know, black blood of the earth. You mean oil? No, black blood of the earth. Oh, well, that.
Yep. Nope, we're not gonna answer that. Not going to tell you.
Nope, we get nothing.
Let's face it, though. That is often a complaint we have had in this show, where, especially for genre films, fantasy, science fiction, where they will bring stuff up like we're supposed to know what it is, and it does have a bearing on the plot, and they kind of just never bother to explain, or the background of it doesn't make any sense.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you think that was a problem with this film?
No, I like the fact that we have no idea what's really going on. It makes us, we're right there with Jack.
Yeah.
You know, Jack is the audience surrogate, and we're right there going, what is happening? What does any of this mean? You feel kind of like Jay at the end of Dogma. Like, why did you hug my head? What's with this chick? What is going on?
Yeah.
And we get nothing.
One of my notes was there's always just enough action and confusion to keep us going through the movie.
Yep.
I did want to come back to something real quick.
Okay.
Something you brought up in trivia. You said, oh, they added that the little scene with the X-Files guy and Egg Shen, because that guy, he's way that we didn't get to. He's from the X-Files. I can't remember who he played.
Yeah.
Basically, setting up the movie.
Mm-hmm.
So you've seen this film more than once. I know you have.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Do you think the film would have played any differently without that little opening bit where Egg Shen is describing and showing what is about to come?
Honestly, I like that little scene.
Yeah.
For one simple reason. When the guy, you know, the lawyer's like, oh yeah, magic. He's like, can you show me any? And when I first saw it, I remember thinking, oh God, you can't show someone. You have to believe. No! Egg Shen raises his hands and shoots lightning bolts between his hands. He actually does magic in front of the guy. That was when I knew, oh, this is not a standard movie. This is not what I was expecting. I love that.
I like the scene, too, because it also puts, quite honestly, it puts the white guys in their place. It's like, you are not meant for this.
You have no idea what's going on here, and you never will.
But try and imagine for a moment, what if that scene wasn't there? If we are just with Jack, the opening.
I think it still could have worked.
I have this bad feeling if they panned down or they tilted down, we would notice that the CB wasn't turned on.
Yeah, probably. And that, you know, Jack had four full Motorman's helpers next to him.
Oh, yuck. Okay.
But I think it would have worked. I think it'd be fine. I just think I liked this. I think it helped.
Yeah, I will say that it always did feel a little tacked on, that scene. Like, it did feel a little bit, well, that actor never shows up later. And we never go back. Nope. Like, we never go back to him saying, you know, leave Jack Burton alone. We don't know.
Is Egg going to go to jail? Yeah. We don't know.
We owe him a great debt. It's like, do you?
He showed great courage. You notice he doesn't say great wisdom or intelligence. But
yeah. Now, there are some things that we have to point out aren't they don't really... Some of the special effects aren't very good.
They don't age all that well.
Oh,
no.
They weren't good in 86 either.
I got to say, in 86, when they showed Lo Pan moving through the walls and through the lattice work, I remember thinking, wow, that's amazing, because I hadn't seen stuff like that. I watch it now and I'm like, oh, there are the matte lines. Okay.
Well, not only that, but you don't see him cut up into little squares. He just goes through.
I realized, I thought you did see that, but when I watched it this time, it's like, oh, I just inserted that myself.
Yeah. That was the least of it, honestly, because we have a few makeup and monster effects. The monster that pops out that will not come out anymore, I felt like I was in a fun house at a carnival. It was just like, it's on a lever, and I can hear the guys grunting as they have to pull it back in. And we don't actually even see it bite the guy that it eats, because, of course, that would be expensive.
That would cost more. I mean, even things like when Lo Pan and Egg Shen are dueling and it's a video game, basically.
I didn't mind that, because it's 1986. At that point, what did we have? The Genesis. So it's like, that's kind of cool. I just love the little hand gestures that...
Yep, he's actually working his thumbs like he's working a joystick.
It's so goofy. But we also have, and they never explain this, nobody ever talks about it, nobody names it, nobody points to it. It's that weird orangutan monster thing, which it's a guy in a suit. It's a guy in a suit.
It's a guy in a suit. Very obviously a guy in a
suit. And it's making noises just like the monsters did back in Lost in Space. It's a guy in a toilet growling into a coffee can. That's what it is. Yep. And it's like, it shows up and it grabs Gracie at one point, because we need to grab Gracie.
Yep.
And then it shows up later because it's dealing with Jack Burton. And then
she kicks it in the plums.
And then it shows up at the end of the film as if it's a sequel beg or something. No one ever talks about it. Doesn't have a name. Nothing.
It's just like, oh, that's here.
I did kind of like the beholder, though. That was kind of neat.
That was cute. The thing that was just an eyeball monster.
Yeah.
It was a spy. That was a nice touch. Although, once it gets stabbed, you go, ah, yes, I see the latex stretching or the rubber.
Well, also, when it has the tongue comes out, it's like, oh, pretend that's not a hand, because I know it's a hand. Yeah. But I also just love they throw these things out here, and if you're lucky, somebody turns to Egg Shen and says, "What's that?" And he'll say, "He uses that to see around his place." Okay, I guess that's what we're getting. We don't get, "Oh, that's a level 3 creature that does 3 to 16 damage or whatever."
I like when Jack is trying to keep up. It's like, "What do you got there, Egg? Magic potion?" "Yeah." "Well, what do we do, drink it?" "Yeah." "Good, thought so."
And at least, okay, if nothing else, even if this film doesn't hold up, if it's just too stupid for words, if it's no longer enjoyable, there are some great quotes in here. And after drinks the potion, kind of feel invincible. And then they're all standing around grinning, and he just goes, "Is it just me, or is it getting warm in here?" You know what Jack Burton always says at a time like this? "Who? Me, Jack Burton." Yeah,
I love the idea that after all this, Thunder still doesn't know his name. It's perfect. It's just perfect.
There are tons of quotes in this film that we have been quoting forever, and most of them do come from Kurt Russell, although some of them do come from James Hong.
And Egg Shen. I mean, Victor Wong has some great ice stuff. There's some more bad news. Ready?
Hey, how did you get up there? Wasn't easy.
That's it. That's
not going to tell you how. Just did it. And of course, this film, for my money, has one of the near-ending lines. It's not quite the ending line, but one of the best near-ending lines since Casablanca. God, aren't you even going to kiss her goodbye? Nope.
That is, again, utterly unexpected, utterly subverting expectations.
Sooner or later, I rub everyone the wrong way.
It's also kind of sweet because he's like saying, "I'm not saying goodbye because I may come back."
And this is like, I don't do relationships. I'm not even sure he does sex. I mean, it's hard to tell. But there are, I mean, you and I have been probably quoting this since 1986 thereabouts. Least, so if nothing else, even if this film is just too dumb for words, and dear God, there's some dumb stuff in this film.
Oh, yeah.
Even if it's 40th anniversary this year. It's actual 40th. If after 40 years, this film is just like, you know, it's nostalgia. There's nothing else to it. There's at least some fun quotes. What else you got before we get to that end part, though?
Why does Jack put on sunglasses when he's going out into the fog?
Don't go out into the fog.
Watch out for the fog.
I don't know.
And also, I got to say, the costumes in this.
Yeah.
Are really good. I mean, the outfits, the storms wear, even the initial dress that, I don't mean the wedding ridiculousness that Tracy and Miao Yin end up, but Miao Yin ends up in this sort of pearlescent, iridescent dress at one point. Mm-hmm. It's just stunning.
Yeah.
And even, you know, Lo Pan's robes.
Yeah.
It looks really good.
I will say, too, that I said we'd get back to this. The lipstick thing, when he kisses Gracie Law near the end, and then neither of them notice initially that the lipstick has smeared all over his face, and he's having the showdown with David Lo Pan. It kind of, that's genius. Honestly, that really little thing, it was,
And the fact that when he's going out to confront Thunder as someone, Gracie grabs him and rubs her sleeve on his mouth to get the lipstick off.
Yeah, and he doesn't even know why. Because
He has no idea what's happening. Yep.
But speaking of not knowing what's happening, we don't know what we're going to come to with this dog of a movie that did so poorly back when it came out.
Yeah, it was a stink burger.
The finish.
So Max.
Yo.
Does this film hold up
Of course it does. I love this movie. I never get tired of this movie.
I almost emailed you before the show and said, "Hey, do you think we can pull off one of those things where at least I don't like the film for the whole show?" And I was like, I don't want to do that.
Not with this movie. This movie is just, it's too much fun. And the performances are great, and it holds up very well. There's almost no offensive stereotypes in it. There are a lot of confusing ones.
It's not very nice to what you could call white trash, but that's fine.
No, that's true. That's true. The white guy is the biggest dope in the movie.
Yeah. His heart's in the right place, but...
Yep. I think it's so much fun. What about you? I think it obviously holds up for you.
I can tell. One of the other tests, I cannot tell you how many times I've watched Big Trouble in Little China. And again, I did see it when it came out. I did see it in the theater. And then I'm sure on home video. I can't even... VHS, DVD, whatever.
Everything. Yep, streaming.
It is one of my favorite quote-unquote heroes because he's such a dimwit. And it's just... It just works. I don't know why. I never caught on to the John Wayne thing, but once I caught on to it, it's like, dear gods, that's brilliant. I know Kurt Russell is not Sir John Gielgud. He's not
an A-list actor.
But you know what? He's a lot of fun, and he carries the film for the most part. He doesn't mind being the guy that has no idea what's going on, and it just happens to be in the right place in the right time to throw the knife. I love the way they killed David Lopan, because I didn't see it coming, and certainly nope, David Lopan.
It's such a shock.
Yeah.
Even the look on his face when it happens, like, what?
Yeah. So
no!
Is it... For today's audiences, could it be considered a little slow? Yeah, it could be considered a little slow. But that being said, I don't want to actually necessarily judge younger audiences because, again, I've seen people. Remember I told you way back, we talked about the fact I went to see Barry Lyndon. I went to see Barry Lyndon in the theater, and it's like, talk about slow. And it was filled with 20-somethings, and they liked it. I showed Buckaroo Banzai to one of my buddies, The Weasel, thinking, it's not going to really go for him. He loved it. If you have somehow avoided, if you have just not seen
or not
Big Trouble,
heard of it.
just watch. It is just fun. There is no depth to this at all.
No
depth.
Don't try to figure it out. Don't try to make it make sense. Just lie back and enjoy the ride.
We are Jack Burton.
We are
just as lost as he is.
We are Jack Burton.
But it doesn't matter because it's going to work out in the end. And that's all that matters. So, yeah.
You know what else is going to work out in the end?
Would it be our
poll question?
Yes.
See, you're not the only one who can do ham-handed transitions.
Yeah, but usually you do much better ones than I do.
Yeah. But we want to know, what is your favorite movie, like this one, that was ignored at the box office but found new life in some other form? Home movie, midnight show, streaming, whatever.
Cult status. Plastic forks.
Ugh. Stained glass windows, tattoos, anything.
Yeah.
But how would you do this, you ask?
Oh, how would you do this?
Thank you. You can go to our website maxmikemovies.com.
I'm not fixing it. I'm leaving it in.
Fine. maxmikemovies.com. And you can leave a comment. You can give us reviews, tell us what you thought of the show, or were we full of that? Were we full of the other thing?
Mm.
We'd make suggestions for other series or other movies we should do.
Mm.
You can also email us with the same thing, just as Herr Halbwitz has done, at us@maxmikemovies.com. You can, of course, find us on
social media, which is Facebook, Blue Sky, and Mastodon. Move on.
You're no fun anymore.
Nope.
Boxface, and you can also find us on the podcast apps of your choice. Of course, because we're on lots and lots of them. You can, of course, also, if you run into one of our eye-covered floating heads, you can whisper it to that, and we'll get the message that way. And, of course, you can call us at our super special futuristic hotline at 617-398-7266. That's 617-398-7266. And leave a voicemail. But we are full steam ahead in this series. So what's coming up on the tracks next, Mike?
Well, we've had a little bit too much fun. That's what I think. Too much fun. We need something dark and depressing. Well, not necessarily dark.
Another one? Okay.
Not necessarily dark and depressing. Not necessarily. Right. But we have a big list, you know, and it's really hard to pick out a film to watch next. True. You know, it was quite a strain for me this week to figure out which movie we were going to
watch. What sort of strain would you call it, Mike?
I might call it an Andromeda strain. Was I too subtle for you?
Not very, very subtle. Oh, God, this is another hyper-realistic, depressing one.
It isn't a depressing one, because luckily we found different things to get ourselves into. We didn't have to worry about this. But The Andromeda Strain is based on a book by Michael Crichton, whom, if I remember correctly, also wrote the screenplay for this.
Oh, okay.
And it's an early 70s film. I will warn you, if you have not seen The Andromeda Strain, and this is not saying good or bad, there is literally no action in this film.
Yeah.
It is not a quick mover. But it does have a very surprising, very well-known director, and that's Robert Wise, who's done a number of great things. And it stars some people that you're probably more familiar with from TV. But it's a Michael Crichton story about technology and how technology, maybe we're not using it the way we should. Maybe we should think twice. Sure, now there's the ooing and the aahing, but later there's the running and the screaming. But one thing you should not do
life is... Life will find a way.
Do not run and scream from next week's episode where we tackle the Andromeda Strain.
This has been a co-production of The Voice of Max and The Movie Wrench.
Oh, yes. Might want to actually turn the recording on.
I'm sitting there ready to clap, and I'm like, it's not recording anything.
That's how the magic box takes your words and makes them into digital things.
Digital things.
Content.
Oh, content. Oh, okay. Yeah. The show is full of content. Full Max of content. Is full of content.
Well, I'm full of something, yes.
I know. Okay. Yeah. I'm recording.
Yep.